Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Maynard and Edgar putting on a show.
Outstanding.
Wow.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
It is all over.
Pedro Fernandez.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. Check it! This is Ring Talk. Often imitated but never duplicated, welcome to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. For the next hour, of course, this is hour number two of our Sunday show. If you can listen to us live, of course, we come to you 11 a.m. Pacific time on Sunday for 2 hours, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, of course, and the American Forces Network, like 1,000 other internet platforms. But the bottom line is, we're going to talk boxing in this hour primarily, and the boxer we'll be focusing on is Hector Macho Camacho. Of course, there's a special out, actually a documentary, I think the Showtime put together, The Macho Man. It's pretty frightening in some regards, and it's riveting in other regards because it's really real. I mean, it's about as real as you can get. I spent some time around Camacho. Of course, I tell you, we were in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and we were in the hotel in San Juan, Puerto Rico. We were staying in a casino. We had a fight in Bayamón, Puerto Rico, which is a town outside of San Juan. And Hector was supposed to be in the main event, and Hector didn't want to come downstairs. He didn't want to come to fight. So I was at the arena. We're getting ready to fight. We're filming the opening four-rounders and that kind of good stuff. And the promoter comes to me and says that Camacho's not coming. I got to give all these people their money back. And guess what? You're not getting paid. So I went to the hotel. I begged Camacho. I basically almost got down on my hands and knees and said to him, man, I got my ex-wife's going to kill me if I go home without child support. And basically that was it. He went and did the fight. He knocked out Vorka. I take that back. He butted Vaca in the first round, and the fight was over with in the blink of an eye. But Camacho did show up. He was all blown out on cocaine, snorting coke that was on the dining room table there. So we've got some Camacho stories, plenty of them. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Hector Camacho may be boxing's greatest showman since Muhammad Ali, and certainly one of its best fighters. A few days ago in Madison Square Garden, he again successfully defended his lightweight title. His share of the purse was said to be about $1 million, so it's no wonder he likes the fight game just the way it is. But some view boxing as nothing more than legalized brutality, a sport like others that leaves many of its performers damaged for life. Those involved in boxing, from managers to TV networks to fighters themselves, resist any changes. Why? Well, just ask the Macho Man, Hector Macho Camacho.
Why, I've been all around the world. I met ambassadors, presidents. I'm important. I'm important because of boxing. A little cockroach that was crawling around the ghetto is important.
Maybe not important, but certainly rich and famous. With a new recording contract and an eye on an acting career, he's been seen everywhere from Ring Magazine to Playgirl. Just 4 years ago, he was on parole, doing time for auto theft, and fighting for $800 a pop, mostly in New York. He's since gone from a borrowed bicycle to a Corvette, two Maseratis, and a Lamborghini. Flash and personality have become his trademark, so much so that you almost forget that first and foremost, he's a boxer. A great boxer. The lightweight division is the best in boxing, and in 29 professional fights, Camacho has never lost. He's the current WBC lightweight champion, 135 pounds of speed and technique that belies the fact he's just 24 years old. He's typical of the young and successful in this game. He can't imagine ever losing or ever being hurt.
It could happen, but it ain't gonna happen. You gotta put that in your head. It ain't gonna happen. It's a poor man's sport. I came from the street. My mother was on welfare. I had all my hopes in it. All my hopes from head to toe. I got my mother's house. I support my son. I got cars forever. Nice training camp, good people, well known, well loved. Can't complain. Hey, break my jaw. Bottom line is, after you break my jaw, I still got my $1 million.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The Macho Man, of course, got knocked off in Puerto Rico on my birthday in 2012, 11-24-2012, November 24th, of course. Wow, I can't forget the November 27, 1999, of course, debacle that took place, of course, in Carolina, Puerto Rico. I said it was Bayamon, Puerto Rico. It was Carolina, Puerto Rico. And, of course, that was when Camacho finally came downstairs, and thank God he did, because I didn't have a ticket home. I found out that Harold Smith had basically cashed in all our return tickets in order to pay a couple of bills. So we didn't have return tickets to go home from Puerto Rico. So had not Camacho come downstairs and fought, none of us would have got paid. Of course, I went back there two or three times afterwards to do some post-production on the show. I don't think the show ever aired, but the bottom line is I made myself a good amount of money. And I want to thank Harold Smith, the late Harold Smith, and of course, Hector Camacho, man, Camacho, what can I say? 79-6, fought a lot of guys, never got stopped. 38 KOs. You remember after the Julio Cesar Chavez fight in 1992, of course, in Las Vegas, where Chavez beat the stuffing out of him for 12 rounds. And, I mean, he didn't quit. He was noble. He was brave. And what can I say? Macho was macho. But there's another side to Hector Camacho, and I just told you about basically the Camacho and the cocaine thing. Of course, that was in Bayamon, Puerto Rico. Here we have Camacho going to Mexico.
We get in this car, we're driving. We're heading close to Texas. I said, let's pull over for the night. He goes, no, you just need to close your eyes for a little bit. I'll keep driving. And I'm like, Macho. He goes, I'm okay. I won't go speed. I said, okay. And I fall asleep. I don't know how long I was closed my eyes, but it wasn't long. He taps me on my shoulder. He goes, hey, I need money for the toll. And I'm like, the toll. And I open my eyes and I see the border. We're on the line to the border into Mexico. I'm like, what are you doing? The patrol looks and they wait for us to go into the security check. And I'm like, it's okay, Macho, no problem. I'll take care of this. Let me talk. He goes, yeah, but that's not the problem. I got a little present in the trunk. I got a kilo in the trunk. And I said, okay, Macho, put the top down. Where it was a convertible, Jack. And I need you to do Macho time right now, right here. He puts the top down. He jumps up out of this car. He jumps onto the hood of this $90,000 Jag. And he stands up and he's screaming, where's Chavez? Everybody went crazy. The Border Patrol comes. Everybody started, Camacho! The Border Patrol guy passes me with a dog. The dog goes crazy. The dog starts barking and scratching. I look in the rearview mirror, and the Border Patrol takes the dog and hits him on the nose. He goes, shut up, that's Camacho!
No doubt about it. Only the Macho Man could pull it off. Sort of reminds me of Muhammad Ali getting Keith McMurray, of course, through customs in China. We were in Shanghai, China, and Keith said he had lost his passport or somebody had stolen his passport. He didn't have his passport. Rumor was he had sold it for $2,600, of which Keith McMurray denies to this day. But the bottom line is Ali walked him through customs in China, and then walked him through customs here in Los Angeles, California, and I was like mind blown. Without a passport, who other than Muhammad Ali could walk somebody through customs like that? And of course, Camacho doing his thing down there in Mexico. But Hector Camacho, without a doubt, one of the most colorful fighters ever, you know, to step onto the stage. I believe a three-time Golden Glove champion from New York City, of course, Spanish Harlem. Larry talked about going in the Spanish Harlem. He talked about his mother being on welfare and making things real tough and this and that. And then, you know, as his career sort of hit a zenith. You know, like it just did, and the cocaine was the zenith. I mean, because his mother, I read some stuff where his mom said he was doing coke back in the Golden Glove days. So if he was 17 years old and doing blow, of course, you know, the different stories that we've heard and the Macho story and things like that we're about to get to, this is just a mind blower. I mean, this is unbelievable.
It should be presented blacks here, okay? African-American has a behavior, and then you get the nigger behavior. You know, and that's the behavior that Mike Tyson has around his entourage. And it scares people away. It's no class. You know, people don't know how to deal with it because, right? Am I right? You know, and then Don Kinesh, well, that he goes to the ghetto.
you know, and promote stuff, you know? But not because of that either. I don't know what I just said, you know? I'm not into politics, right? But that's what my problem is. They got too many niggas around home. They need more African Americans.
So then, given the gift of the opportunity to retract or soften the statements he made in New York, he might have made it worse in Vegas.
Okay, the fight is...
And I also want to clear up a little statement that people are repeating around about niggers. Okay, when I made the comment about Mike Tyson, okay, they asked me, what you think about Mike? What's going to happen to Mike? I said, Mike is a very unhappy character because instead of having classy African-American people with class to make him look good, you know, he got all this nigga attitude people around home that makes him act the way he does, like a little beast that he ain't.
Mike Tyson, whoa, 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 whoa. Of course, Hector can watch him on Mike Tyson. Both those guys have had some issues over the years. Mike Tyson explained that he had issues with drugs as well, but not to the extent where Hector Camacho did. I mean, Camacho was like basically an addict I know from like 85, 86 on. I mean, he just was. I mean, there wasn't enough cocaine in the world for Hector Camacho. And, of course, some of those things that took place in his retirement in South Carolina and places like that, it was embarrassing to read some of them headlines. Hector Camacho, one-time world champion, you know, caught burglarizing some or allegedly suspected of burglarizing some electronics store or something like that. Come on, man. That's not what I want to hear. I mean, you talked about here, he was earlier bragging about having all that money in this net. Well, guess what? The money didn't stay. I mean, there were people that tried to set up funds for him and annuities in this net, and he broke the annuities. I mean, Marty Cohen was his semi-manager, a guy out of Florida, of course, a real slick dude, an old-timer. He was about 95 years old when he died. But the bottom line is Marty said he was around when Jack Johnson fought. I kid you not. Anyway, Marty put together a couple of annuities for Camacho. All Camacho had to do was not touch them until he was 50 years old, and he was going to get $150,000 a year. I mean, tax-free. It would have been taken care of. But, of course, like Roberto Duran, he couldn't wait. They broke into those annuities, man, and those annuities are like tax-free, 150 grand for the rest of his life, and Camacho let that go. Anyway, of course, Hector would retire, basically never really retired, but his last fight, of course, was against Saul Duran. He lost it, a unanimous nod in 10 rounds. It was in Comiskey, Florida, and I was a bit surprised that he even took that fight because at the time, he was nowhere near training. I mean, he just wasn't. He beat Yori Boy Campos. I think the back was a draw the year before, a split decision draw. So he was on the downslide. Too bad, because he was really, really a good personality at one point in time. But you know what? Colombian dust, it ain't no joke.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Pedro offers you his protection.
Cold shot. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Macho. We're talking about Macho. It's a documentary on Showtime right now, of course, about the colorful. I keep going on. There's like 1,000 different adjectives or descriptions you can use to describe the one, the only Macho Man. It's all about Hector Macho Camacho. Of course, he was macho as a boxer until he got hooked by Edwin Rosario. I think that fight took place in the Garden, but the Battle of Puerto Ricans took place in, I think that was 1986, somewhere around there. But at that point in time, Macho was fearless, okay? He got his chin checked there. He'd never been hit in a fight like that, never been hurt like that in a fight. And I think from that point forward, he was a bit of a safety first type of guy. But, you know, this documentary, what can I say? You've got to see it to believe it. I haven't watched the entire thing yet. I broke into it and saw parts here and there. But at the end of the day, we're going to say it's all about Hector. This is the Macho Joe's story.
There was always something about Hector that was a lot of fun. You're always happy to see him.
Did you give the dogs names, or did you find out what their names were?
No, I always got his mush.
He was hard not to like. But before the night of the fight, we got a call in our hotel. One of his handlers, in great stress, said, you know, you've got to come over here. We'll get him on the phone. He's trying to jump out a window. And he was completely out of his mind, drug-wise. You know, talked him out of it, calmed down, and they got him out of the danger. And then the concern was, how's he going to be fight time?
Hector Camacho!
Tim, this is by far the most dangerous opponent that Camacho has faced.
And the next day, you wouldn't have known anything had happened.
Camacho told me he's going to go right out and jump on him in the first round. Let's see if he does it.
There was domination there. He threw the punches he wanted to throw, moved the way he wanted to move, and did what he wanted to do. And he showed everything that he could be, the superstar that he could be.
And there is chaos in the ring.
We were grateful for the fact that he had recovered and the fight went on. But it was a source of great concern to us from that point forward because we knew he was dealing, you know, with the demons.
There were like more than a handful of times in which Camacho had issues as far as cocaine was concerned and him not coming down for an actual fight or not wanting to come downstairs to fight from the hotel and things like that. I conned him out of the hotel. I've been told he's been conned a few other times out of the hotel, but you got to think about that story right there that his ex-bodyguard was talking about the fact that he tried to smuggle a kilo of cocaine into Mexico, just drive it across the border. And he didn't tell him until he got there. He had to go out there and do some type of act where he's standing on the hood of the car screaming about Julio Cesar Chavez, Mexico's biggest star. The dope dog is going crazy. And the cop with the dope dog is like kicking the dog, telling him to shut up. The dog's saying there's a kilo of cocaine in that trunk. Come on, man. Let me go. Let me do my thing. And this and dog said, not, anyway, the dog was dog. The dog was right. And Camacho got away with that one. More power to him. May he rest in peace, the Macho Man. But check out the documentary, Macho. It's on Showtime as I speak. Now, let's talk about the week in history. Of course, brought to us by our house historian, Billow. 12-11-1982. I remember this. Bobby Chacon wins the WBC junior lightweight title. Taken out, wow, Bazooka Limon. 15-round decision, man. It was Ring Magazine Fight of the Year. I'll never forget, I was sitting there ringside. Don Chargan, I got to mention this a little bit. Not brag when you're telling the truth. Anyway, I got to mention this. Don Chargan sent all these guys down the week before to watch me fight, actually watch Keith Rucker fight me, okay, because they thought Keith Rucker was in a clean house on me, that Keith Rucker was undefeated, 8-0, 6 knockouts, 7 knockouts, something like that, 6'1.5", 139 pounds. He was a hitman, blah, blah, blah. All these promoters, guy came from Arizona, somebody came up from the Olympic, somebody came up from the Forum, John Jackson, somebody sent somebody. They all wanted to see who this black kid was out of Northern California. Well, anyway, 12 seconds of the fight, I had him on his butt telling him to get up. They almost disqualified me because of the words I used, but I was pumped up. I was really pumped up. What I'm trying to tell you was, a week later, we have this fight in Sacramento, and Don Chargan sits me right in front of the TV cameras. They're on TV. He gave me two. I didn't know you got two seats back then. I was new to this. They said, Don Chargan called me on the phone and said, we want to invite you to the fight. Well, I thought it was just me. So I just drove up there with my dog in the car. You know, the dog stayed in the car, and I went into the arena, and this and that. He goes, well, who are you with? I said, I'm by myself. Go. Well, there's two tickets for you. I didn't know that. That's how green I was. Okay. I just won my first Golden Glove Championship. I was really green. Anyway, that was a memorable night. I remember telling Bobby Chacon after the fight, and I think you can hear me during the 15 round going, go to the body, Bobby. Go to the body. He did go to the body. And of course, Chacon would win. And that was really basically his last real big win. After that point, in his career, of course, he was deep into cocaine, and his wife had just committed suicide 6 months before in 1982. So it was a tumultuous year for Bobby Chacon, of course. And then he was in the Ring Magazine Fight of the Year to boot that. Anyway, the bottom line is the 15th round went down 10-7. Some people say that score was a little bit off. December the 12th, Henry Armstrong born December 12th, 1912. Of course, the three-time champion. What, he held the featherweight, the welterweight, and the middleweight championship? The featherweight, the lightweight, and the welterweight championship all at the same time. Stepped to the middleweight, and I think got a draw. 1951, Ezra Charles fought in San Francisco. He beat Joey Maxim. Of course, Joey was a good guy. Joey was a guy that I met down there in Las Vegas. He was running a couple of construction companies. He was an advisor here and advisor there. Joey was a nice guy to me, no doubt about that. Of course, Ezra Charles trained at Newman's Gym, no doubt about that. Inglewood, California, 1969. We're talking about boxing history right now. Ruben Olivares. I don't know how this guy got to be such a great Mexican fighter. I don't know if he could beat me in the Golden Gloves. Anyway, he knocked out a guy by the name of Alan Rutkin in the second round, retains the World Bantamweight Championship. I just never thought much of Olivares. I never did. Of course, Arguello lit him up like the White House Christmas tree, but he is one of our all-time favorites as far as the house historian is concerned, Bill O says. 1975, Oslo, Norway, Alfredo Escalera. Wow. Was he still, man? I believe, man, he was a snake man. He was Arguello took care of him. Whoa. Anyway, KO9, Sven Erik Paulsen retained the WBC junior lightweight title that he would eventually lose to Alexis Arguello. Of course, Arguello, the greatest 130-pounder in the history of boxing, without a doubt. 1981, WBC featherweight champion Salvador Sanchez beat Pat Caudill over 15 rounds. It was in the Houston, Texas. I think it was the Astrodome, I believe, at the time. Anyway, 1966, Bone Crusher Smith. 1986, Bone Crusher Smith in the Garden knocks out Tim Witherspoon in the first round to capture the WBA Heavyweight Championship. Of course, Bone Crusher, the only heavyweight champion ever to hold a college degree. Did you know he had a Bachelor of Sciences degree, something like that? Anyway, bottom line is, Bone Crusher, smarter than he looked, but dumb to an extent, because when he fought Mike Tyson, he never threw any punches. Talk about a guy that fought handcuffed. He fought for like 11 and a half rounds or 11 rounds handcuffed. He never threw a punch. This was a guy that could punch, right? And the 12th round, he throws a punch. He almost lifts Mike Tyson off the ground with an uppercut. So had he been throwing earlier, he might have had a chance in that fight. Of course, he would lose a 12-round decision. I think that was outdoors at the Las Vegas Hilton Hotel. But Bone Crusher Smith, I called him Bone Hugger. For the first 11 rounds, all he did was hug on Tyson. Bone hugging, just hugging. At the end of the day, of course, he did knock out Tim Witherspoon and capture the WBA Heavyweight Championship. Witherspoon let his guard down, thought he was fighting an old man that was slow, wasn't on top of his game. Tim was an up-and-down type of guy. Of course, Timmy and I spent about 4 weeks together in Antigua. Antigua is a country like in the Caribbean, out near Puerto Rico and places like that, San Juan, Dominican Republic and Antigua. Anyway, bottom line is, we spent a month there, and of course he wasn't training too hard. He ended up fighting somebody for a vacant, title shot to step up from the journeyman level. Of course, he was at this point in time in 2000, 2001, he was way past his peak, but he had one more shot if he could win this fight. He couldn't put it together. He just couldn't. I mean, cause he was seeing some girl from Antigua. I mean, that's what he was doing the entire time. I mean, when I went to run with Tim Witherspoon, I had to go get him at the chick's house. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing when you're babysitting fighters and you gotta go get them either at the bar or at a chick's house, it's not a good thing. It's just, it's not. And I told you about the Cuban fighters I work with in Florida. When I went to go pick those guys up, Harold Smith had me picking these guys up to run at 5 o'clock in the morning, and there's booze. I can smell booze in the van. And I'm looking around, and it ain't just one guy. It was like, there was like three or four Cuban guys, but at least two of those Cuban guys, I won't mention them, but I have in the past, were drinking. I mean, drinking and boxing, but that's just the way it's done, I guess, to some people. 1986, Julio Cesar Chavez in New York City defeats Juan Laporte. Of course, those two guys were pretty good friends. Retains the WBC junior lightweight title, a 12-round decision. I think that Laporte, of course, was one of the guys that, it was a good fighter, but not a great fighter. Of course, a Puerto Rican out of New York, but not the greatest fighter of all time. 1992, Nigel Benn knocked out Nicky Piper. Of course, that was retained the super middleweight title in the 11th round. Nigel Benn, of course, the guy that was hooked up in that fight with Gerald McClellan. That just wasn't good. Gerald knocked him out of the ring in the first round, and instead of being awarded a first-round knockout, they let the fight go, and at the end, Gerald McClellan suffered permanent brain damage. He's blind. It's a bad scene, no doubt about that. Anyway, may he rest. His sister, Lisa McClellan, I don't get to mention her enough, but Lisa takes care of Gerald. And she is her brother's keeper. And I mean, she really is. And she puts up with stuff that you wouldn't believe. I can't tell you some of the stuff that happens around those people because I'm not going to embarrass anybody on there. But you know, Gerald is not easy to deal with. Gerald is like a petulant child to an extent. And I'm not knocking him or anything like that. But this is what the brain damage and things like that have done to him. I mean, brain damage, the fact that he can't see, he's blind. I'll never forget what he told me that day when we met in Rockport, Illinois for that the celebration of his career and try to make some money for him and Greg Page. And he said to me, "Is Emmanuel with you, Pedro? Is Emmanuel with you?" That was sad. Emmanuel wasn't there. Emmanuel Stewart, of course, his first trainer. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Just under 90 seconds remains in the fourth round.
He used that arm to try to take away the base.
Oh, look at the kicks. That's old school Hicks and Gracie style.
Oh, he's got the choke.
Stuck it in.
Penn looking to choke out Florian. BJ Penn looking to remain the champion. It is all over. BJ Penn has defeated Teddy Florian.
If you didn't know, not too many people did because it didn't get too many buys. UFC 256 last night on ESPN pay-per-view. Of course, Devson Figueroa retained the UFC flyweight title with a draw against Brandon Moreno. One judge saw 48-46 for Figueroa. That's three rounds of two. The other two judges saw 47-47 or even. Bottom line is draws in mixed martial arts, five rounds. It doesn't happen too often. Charles Oliveira beat the former lightweight champion Tony Ferguson. That's right, Tony Ferguson, the guy that stalked his wife, of course, poured holy water on his wife. That's one of the greatest lines of all time when she called the police. My husband, he's acting weird. Is he violent? Well, he poured holy water on me. Yeah, well, he thought you were the devil. You know, a lot of guys think their wives are the devil, but not too many guys pour holy water on them. Got to give them props to that anyway. It looks like his career is toast. He lost his second fight in a row. This time he got beat by Charles Oliveira. It was unanimous not across the board. 30-26, meaning there was 1-10-9 round. Time for Tony Ferguson to take that bad knee of his and go find a job. A women's strawweight bout took place on the card. Mackenzie Dern beat Verna Janaroba. That was unanimous not across the board. Outside of that, Cyril Gane knocked out Junior Dos Santos, a former UFC champion, heavyweight champion, knocked him out in the second round, 234, and with an elbow. So hopefully, you know, Junior will walk away, because Junior, man, Junior's taking some beatings like I did. And the one he took from Cain Velasquez was the most horrific UFC beating I've ever seen as far as heavyweights were concerned. Just a horrific beating, time and time, just taking shots after shots after shots after shots. And you know what? I really don't want to see that. You don't need to see death. In fact, I've been telling you all along, is that Dana White needs to pull the plug on some of these fights. In other words, if a fight guy's getting his ass whooped, guess what? Pull the plug on him. It's time to stop. The UFC comes back, ESPN Plus, of course. They're going back, I believe. Where are they going? They're going back to Dubai. Of course, Dubai, they've had their run in Las Vegas, the Apex Center. I think they're going back to Dubai. They're going to do this last fight at the Apex Center, December 19th. After that, it's going to be all Dubai. But December 19th, Stephen Thompson, gifted kid, no doubt about that. Good looking, he can fight. He's a welterweight, 170 pounds. Taking on Geoff Neal, that's going to be in the five-round main event. Jose Aldo, still fighting. Scarface, batting a bantamweight. Man, what kind of drugs is he taking to make 135 pounds still? Anyway, the former champion, Scarface, lost to Conor McGregor back then. That's how far, yeah, he lost to Conor. Anyway, it's time for him to go away. Anyway, Marlon Vera is in the other corner. It's going to be a three-round co-feature. Of course, this is ESPN Plus. Next week, the 19th on ESPN Plus. Look at the rest of the card. Not a whole lot of stars out there because there isn't a whole lot of stars for the UFC to deal with. Of course, they're coming back with Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier in a rematch. Nobody wants to see that. Conor won the first time. I mean, what's going to happen the second time outside it didn't happen the first time? Maybe a quicker ending? Or if Conor's totally shot, he gets beat? Outside of that, ain't too lot happening. That's going to happen UFC 257. It's going on January 23rd. That'll be in Dubai. Of course, they're going back to Dubai, as I said, for UFC, looks like UFC Fight Night. It's going to be January 16th. That'll be in Dubai, January 20th. UFC Fight Night 185. That'll be in Dubai as well. They'll come back with Poirier and McGregor on the 23rd. The 30th means UFC Fight Night 186. February 6th, UFC 187. UFC 258. February 13th. February 20th is going to be again in Dubai. February 27th in Dubai. UFC Fight 189. So I guess they're going to stay in Dubai all the way through March of 2021. That is the plan. More power too. I mean, they're putting fights on. My knock against the UFC is that they don't stop fights and guys get horrific beatings and they don't get paid enough money to, you don't get paid enough money to do that. You don't get paid enough money to take beatings like that. You just really don't. Now, the boxing career looks hot and happening. Of course, we talk about, this month of December. Usually in December, the month sucks because guys are taking the month off. TV networks don't have nothing to do. They don't want to do fights. They want to send, you know, their staff home for the holidays and that. But because of the COVID virus, things like that, things are happening, of course, without crowds. So like Tim Tszyu, the son of the former junior welterweight champion, of course, that lit up Zab Judah. I'm talking about Kasia Tszyu. Tim Tszyu, he can fight, no doubt about that. 6-0, 12 KOs, taking on Bowen Morgan, 21-1, 11 KOs. Look for Tszyu to keep us standing there at 154 pounds. It's going to go down December the 16th. December the 16th as well, Wilfredo Mendez and Alexis Diaz. The 17th, Charles Conwell is going to be on, it'll be on ESPN, I believe. And that's going to go down, Charles Conwell versus Madir Ashedov. And of course, the 18th, Gennady Golovkin. Wow. Still fighting? How old is he now? 95? Nah, 98. Anyway, Golovkin still only lost that one fight to Canelo. Give him some props. I'm not trying to disrespect him. I think he's getting long in the tooth. Anyway, 40-1, one draw, 35 KOs. Of course, a one draw, too. I think, you know, it's a little controversial there. People thought he might have won that fight. But at the end of the day, Golovkin is still a draw, and especially across in the Eastern Europe area. Of course, not too much in the United States. But he's got a guy by the name of Camille Shimizeta, who's 21 and zip with 5 KOs. 5 KOs. The guy should be arrested for impersonating a professional fighter. If you've got 21 fights and you could knock out more than 5 guys, you ain't long for this game, baby. It just ain't happening. I mean, the Willie Pep things are just not happening no more. No doubt about that. Now, Canelo Alvarez, the 19th, of course, the world super middleweight champion, or is he? Well, Callum Smith, of course, the guy from the UK, he's held all those titles, I think, except for the WBC belt. He's a WBA champion. Well, they'll be fighting for both belts now. Canelo Alvarez, 53-1, a couple of draws, 36 KOs, taking on Callum Smith, 27 and zip. He's never lost. 19 KOs. According to the boxing PAC, Socrates Palmer, he's having hell making 168 pounds. So I guess that's the big question mark here. They rushed him into this fight. And, you know, more power to him. He's going to make a whole lot of money. And, I think he will. He'll make a whole lot of money, especially you got some of that UK money as far as the TV over there is concerned. At the end of the day, of course, Canelo Alvarez and him are going to hook it up on the zone. Barry Hearn runs that. Canelo Alvarez looks like he's in for an easy win here. I mean, whether the guy's undefeated or not, they're not going to put Canelo in with anybody that's going to be, I think, threatening. I just don't see it. I mean, why would you? I mean, cause, you know, he hasn't been active, hasn't fought in a year. So he wants to see him go again. Anyway, as far as the wrestling scene is concerned, the fight I'm looking forward to is January the 2nd. The kid with the attitude. The pretty boy! Hector Martinez's not-so-favorite fighter, Ryan Garcia. 20 and zip, 17 KOs. Of course, come to us out of Central California, down there on the coast. Bottom line is, he's a rugged dude. People think he's just a big sissy. People think he's an internet bot. I mean, we've played that stuff on the air where Raleigh Romero's giving him a bad time and beating him up and sparring and this and that. Of course, Mayweather says, I'll give you $200,000 if you fight Raleigh Romero now. But, you know, Raleigh Romero may have a WBA lightweight title, but Raleigh Romero won the very controversially. In fact, he was, to call it a gift would have been the gift of the year, 2020, no doubt about that. So Raleigh Romero, not in Ryan Garcia's league, not in my mind, but Garcia, 20 and zip. Man, he's a guy, 2.5 million or 4 million Instagram bot followers, all that kind of good stuff. That means people want to watch him fight. If they like him that much, they will follow him on the internet. Bottom line is at least half of those people. And if half of those people paid for him to fight, that'd be 2 million pay-per-view buys. Think about that. 2 million pay-per-view buys. Of course, he's fighting the zone for now, but at the end of the day, Ryan Garcia is a pay-per-view product, I think, in my mind, and he will end up on pay-per-view doing the big fights against Gervonta Davis, against Teofimo Lopez. I mean, this is the threesome they've got there. I mean, it's a great threesome. And of course, you've got Devin Haney, who's sort of like, we don't talk about him too much because he's a guy that, he's the internet champion from San Francisco, undefeated in 25 fights. But after that fight with Gamboa a couple weeks ago, just move him out of the picture. Just move him out of the picture. Anyway, Luke Campbell, a rough, tough dude, lost a decision fight to Vasyl Lomachenko, going to hook up with Ryan Garcia at 135. That's going to go down January the 2nd. As far as the rest of the schedule is concerned, Floyd Mayweather. Oh, God! I never thought I'd have to say this again. But Mayweather's doing an exhibition against that internet guy, you know, the Logan Paul guy, the YouTube guy. He knocked out the basketball player a couple weeks ago, Nate Robinson, whatever his name is. But Nate had no business being in the ring. Of course, when you get into the ring with a guy that can punch a little bit and you can't take a punch all that well, things can get ugly. Anyway, get this. They're talking about putting this fight, this exhibition, Floyd Mayweather, Saturday, February 20, 2021. I think they're going to do this in Japan. Well, Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul on FanMeo pay-per-view. I don't know what that is, but FanMeo pay-per-view is going to carry this. More power to you. Floyd Mayweather coming back. That's the last thing boxing needs right now, is Mayweather to come back. What they need really now is Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury to hook it up. Of course, Anthony Joshua, the world heavyweight champion in the minds of some, but not in my mind, because the linear champion is Tyson Fury. He's never been beaten. He had that draw with Deontay Wilder. He beat Wilder. He only lost the 2 rounds in which he got knocked down. Of course, he comes back in the rematch and lights Wilder up like the White House Christmas tree. I mean, you just did. Speaking of Christmas, happy holidays if you're listening to the show in the month of December 2020. As Christmas does approach, of course, with COVID, Christmas ain't the same, but make it as complete as you can. I mean, this will be a tough year. This is a tough challenge for everybody financially, emotionally. Some people are, you know, have got housing issues coming up at the beginning of the year, things like that. Hopefully the government, and I'm not saying they will, but hopefully the government will step in as far as these evictions are concerned and maybe get some stimulus checks in the pockets of people. Because I don't know if I told you this, but the government of Canada has been giving every citizen $1,800 a month. $900 every 2 weeks. So the bottom line is if Canada could afford to do that with their population, we could have been able to do that with our population. Of course, we gave that big tax break to the rich folks. Donald Trump did, and to the corporations and that kind of stuff a couple of years ago. So see, that money could have been spent right now on the country, on the people that need it. There are more people shoplifting food. I read something in the paper the other day. I actually read a newspaper. But there's shoplifting going on now. People having to shoplift for food. That's just not cool. I mean, you know, you see the homeless people on the street now. You're seeing families having to shoplift. That's just not the way I wanted to see America, especially not in my lifetime. I never thought I'd see it this bad. I really don't. I mean, people in food lines across the country, and you got to attribute it to the guy at the top, because guess what? The buck stops with the president. Remember Harry Truman said that? Well, it doesn't change, baby. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. We'll finish things up. Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the break for us, looking at a couple of distinct decisions in the world of boxing that people have had some issues with. So we talk issues after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Must know that I'm not like no other fighter. I can give it and I can take it.
There's only one Mayweather.
I've been here before. I know what it takes. I don't want no excuses. So I'm just going out there and be the same Floyd Mayweather. I've been here before and I know what it takes.
He talks the talk and he walks the walk.
When it's lights, camera, action, it's time to get the fans entertainment. The fans want to be entertained. I mean, when I'm home, I'm like anyone else.
Walking to the money land.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Did he hurt you or your children?
No, no.
No, you're
just,
okay.
He really, just random stuff, you know, like he puts holy water on me. I don't know what's going on with him.
Are you going to stop somewhere and meet with the police so they can talk to you?
Should I go to the police station?
Tony Ferguson's wife about pouring the holy water on him. What did you do to prompt him to put holy water on you? Think about that. Talk about the most controversial decisions in boxing recently. 1999, listen to this. I bet, I went on the air, I said if Evander Holyfield loses to Riddick Bowe in this big fight that we're going to put on, I said I will eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air, okay? It ended up being a draw. Thank God it was a draw. I mean, the bottom line is my guy had lost. There was no doubt about that. I was ready to eat some paper, but it didn't work out that way. Of course, that was a very controversial decision, a draw back in 1999. Oscar De La Hoya and Tito Trinidad, people thought that was so controversial. I really didn't think so. How about Mayweather? Deaton defeating Jose Luis Castillo back in 2002. I thought that was pretty crazy. I thought that Castillo won that fight going away, but some people say to me, you know, Floyd came back and won in the rematch. Yeah, much like Andre Ward lost the first fight to Sergey Kovalev probably and came back in the rematch, of course, and stopped him. Joe Louis defeated Jersey Joe Walcott in 1947. That was a bit of a ripoff as well, of course. Hey, how about Roy Jones when he got burned in the Olympics back in 1980? Of course, Park Si-hun defeats Roy Jones Jr. Man, that was the biggest ripoff of all time. I remember saying to myself, watching it on TV and saying, what the hell happened there? But another bigger ripoff, Pernell Whitaker. Always getting the short change, of course, got the short change against Julio Cesar Chavez. He beat him decisively. But Oscar De La Hoya, 1997, there was no doubt about it. Pernell dropped Oscar, rocked Oscar, and guess what? Oscar won. I couldn't believe it. The scores were 150, 111, 160, 110, and 160, 110. But it was like large margins. I was like blown away by that. I couldn't believe it. I mean, holy cow, what are you talking about? But De La Hoya, He had nothing on this draw between Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. Tommy Hearns dropped Ray Leonard twice, of course. One judge had it 113-112 for Ray. The other judge had it 113-112 for Hearns. And one judge had it 112-112. So the bottom line is it was a draw. But, man, if ever there was a fight where Ray just got his flat out got his ass whooped, this was it. I mean, he got knocked down twice. He was nearly laid out in the seventh round. I mean, he came back. He wobbled Tommy a couple times. But at the end of the day, of course, they had a wild 12th round, but that doesn't win you the fight. And one judge actually gave him the 12th round by 2 points, which was crazy because he hadn't knocked anybody down. Anyway, some of the most controversial things that ever happened in boxing, of course. There was also the Michael Doakes, Mike Weaver fight in Las Vegas, Nevada, the heavyweight title fight when Joey Curtis, the referee, jumped in like after about 19 seconds to stop the fight, said, it's over with. Doakes was the winner. That smelled of a fix because, you know, Doakes was a Don King fighter at that point in time, and Don, not saying that Don was a mob, but at that point, Don was in control at that point in time, and what Don said got done. You know what I'm saying? So Don wanted Michael Doakes as champion. Michael Doakes became champion. That's the way it was. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, 37 plus years now. Your inside look at the world of boxing and MMA. You can listen to this show, of course, via podcast, 1,000 different places. One of the places is Anchor.fm. Anchor.fm has all the Ring Talk Live Worldwide broadcasts. Until next week, keep your hands up, keep your chin down. Most importantly, keep your butt off the canvas of life. Don't forget, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a production of Sports Byline. 'Cause I love you so.